Thank you for joining us and welcome to another edition of Answers Network. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza, and today we're going to be talking about coaches and how they can make a great difference and they can be a great resource to gain better mental health and to achieve a more satisfying and fulfilling life. We're joined by Jen Selcho, who is a International Coaching Federation accredited certified high performance life coach. Now that's a mouthful. Who, although located in Southern California, thanks to our ability to connect virtually, has helped clients throughout the world achieve their goals and find fulfillment in all areas of life. Jen, welcome to Answers Network.
Thanks, Alan. Thanks for having me on the show.
Well, it's my pleasure. And lately, the show seems like it flies by, so I'm going to get right into some things. Before we discuss the many ways that coaching can enhance a person's life, what was your path to becoming a coach?
Well, it's fairly long and varied. So ever since I've been little, people have always come to me for like perspective and advice. And so it was something I always did. I just didn't know that coaching was an actual job. And if I knew that was a thing, I would have been doing that from the very beginning. So I had a path through sports medicine. I worked with athletic teams. I worked in brain injury, worked with stroke, people with traumatic brain injuries and stroke. And then I went on to a career as a mom, and I raised three boys. And so while I was doing that, I got into real estate. I became a broker. And then I helped people with investment real estate. And so, but whatever I was doing, I was always helping people get to another level and or get new perspective or get new ideas and brainstorm. And those are all things that coaches do. And then when I figured out it was a thing that you could just do as a job, I started by just thinking, I've always been into personal development. And probably since I was a bit in my 20s. So all the books that you could read, whenever I had a question, it would go that route. So I was influencing friends and with Dale Carnegie, Jim Rohn, that positive aspect. I went on to Brendon Burchard and his high performance habits. Or with real estate, it was Rich Dad, Poor Dad. So no matter what, I was always delving into these things. And so that's how I found the path to coaching. And then I became certified in it. I went through the path of ICF, which is the International Coaching Federation. And so I could do the best that I could do. And I figured if people are coming to me, I want to have as many resources available to them as possible. So I just kept on reading, getting certified, and growing in my coaching skills. So that's how I became a coach.
Well, you named a lot of very influential people. And looking at those as possible mentors, but I think at the same time, they're also like coaches. So I love the fact that, if we're going to be a good coach, maybe we need some coaching to make sure that we do the best we can. I like that.
Yeah, absolutely. I have several coaches that I work with, for me personally, and they have different specialties that they work on. And so I'll meet up with them and talk about, what their opinions are, and they help me to be a better coach.
I like that. A message was coming in, an instant message. And again, I want to take the time to thank those people that take the time to send in messages or send in questions, sometimes ahead of time, sometimes during the show. And I'll always do what I can to get to them. This one reads, as a single mom of two teenagers with little time to meet and establish a romantic relationship with a life partner, what strategies do you recommend to balance my responsibilities, maintain and nurture a strong bond with my children to ensure their emotional and academic growth, while also taking care of my own well-being? And this is from Meredith in Springfield, Illinois.
Well, thank you, Meredith. Thanks for writing in. And that was a lot to unpack and a lot, right? So Meredith, first of all, great job, because what Meredith did in that is she identified several different areas, right? So she's like, what can I do for my kids? Not just my kids in general, but what can I do for their academic support? What can I do for their emotional support? What can I do as a mom? What can I do for me personally? And So each of those things would be a topic for coaching, right? So, mm-hmm. and what the most important thing would be is to slow down and explore the space in each of those areas, right? And that would be the primary thing that I start to do with people. It's like, okay, what are the different areas? How can you slow that down? Look at each area separately, come up with the priorities in each of those areas. And what would be the biggest thing that you could do? Let's something that's more on the surface level is like, what can I do for my kids academically? That might be an easier starting point. Right. Right? So by thinking about what can I do for my kids academically, and if she has multiple kids, that might be a different answer for each of the kids.
Right.
It might be one answer. And so each child, what would be the top three things that would influence my child academically that would put them on the road to success? And answer that question, just three things. And the same thing with the next child and the same thing with the next child. You can see how that expand out. I mean, I have three children, so that's why I said three. But if you're just doing three things for each child, that's already nine things on that you have to deal with, right? And
yep.
So just dealing with those top priorities is key. Then Meredith, what can you do for yourself? What recharges you on the daily and maybe even the hourly? What can you do to reset yourself to decrease what's on your plate so that you can have more energy throughout the day because you're dealing with a lot of different factors, as you just laid out? And what can you do weekly? What can you do monthly? What can you do annually to get in practices? And sometimes they're just small things. So small that it can create a habit. And you can attach that habit and work it into your day. And then all of a sudden, it doesn't take any more energy because it's like brushing your teeth. You don't think about, how am I going to brush my teeth? How am I going to get those molars? How am I going to, right? You don't focus on it. It's a habit. So then how do you break things down into habits so they just become a part of your natural routine? And then you can add on more things. So that's a broad view, but definitely a good starting place for Meredith and anyone who's looking to improve something in their lives.
I certainly agree with that. And I think I'd also, in talking directly to Meredith, can you go find a mirror and look in the mirror and give yourself a big smile? Because you're already halfway there. The fact that you recognize the fact that you want to balance your relationships, but that you value the fact that you want to have a nurturing and strong bond with your kids. You don't want to sacrifice that to focus on yourself. You're way ahead of the curve to start with. And I think that, you know, that getting a coach, getting somebody that can just help you balance it. But the fact that you know that you need it all, I think there's too many people out there that they'll burn themselves out and get so frustrated with one thing that it's just, okay, that's it. It's all about me. And I don't hear that at all. So again, give yourself a big smile. I think that I think you get it.
Yeah, that's great, Alan.
All right. So now let's go with, and Meredith had a very specific situation that she's dealing with, but when people are struggling with, let's take procrastination or just a lack of focus, how do people decide I need a coach or I need a therapist? How do we make that decision and move forward and get the best results?
Okay, great question. Well, a coach and therapist are very different roles. So therapist is if you have something that has underlying issues like trauma, past trauma, something you need to deal with, anything in the past, then that's definitely the job for a therapist to unpack that, see how that's affecting your life, seeing how the past is really a block to right now.
Mm-hmm.
And or if there's an underlying diagnosis. So coaches don't do anything with diagnoses, don't deal with trauma. But therapy and coaching can go very well hand in hand.
Exactly.
So sometimes a therapist absolutely needed. And I will refer people to therapy all the time because I come in at a certain point. And the point that a coach can come in is right up after therapy. So now that you have this thing dealt with, then how can you move forward where do you want to go? Identify where you want to go. Okay, well, this is my past. In the past, I did this. Now, what do I do? Because whatever got you here is not going to get you there. Yeah. So taking where you are, and then sometimes it's totally flipping the script to 180 degrees to how do I do things differently now? How do I take this new mindset? How do I implement it into an action plan so I can start taking steps forward into something specific, something that I want, something that makes me excited and, you know, fulfilling and is whatever my definition of success is. Going back to Meredith, you know, it's like she wants to not just to have children, not to have a relationship with her children, but really having a meaningful bond with each of her children. So what would be action steps that she can take? And again, identifying those three things, what are the priorities? What's really going to change from where I am here to where I want to go, and identifying that and moving forward. So that being said, you know, therapist has one role, coach has another, and sometimes we work well together. And
you know, as you were saying that, I thought of sort of an analogy as someone who has worked with at-risk youth. And one of the things many years ago, my big issue with what was going on with many of the programs was there wasn't good aftercare. You know, it wasn't, and again, I'm going back 30 years or so, to where many times this young person would go to a program, it might be drug and alcohol rehabilitation or something, and they would come back and they would backslide. And what I realized was that there wasn't the aftercare. That's the feeling that I was getting when you were talking about having someone go to a therapist, deal with their trauma, and then again, working hand in hand, almost where that therapist then refers them directly to a coach that says, now take what you've learned and run with it. Be the best you can be.
Yeah.
So anyway, that was the feeling that I got. Does that seem consistent with what we're talking about?
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of people who see me, they have had therapy in the past and they're like, yeah, I get that. Like I get the past, but now what do I do moving forward? And a lot of times people have a hard time identifying something to move forward to. Now, not right. just letting go of the past and not just saying, okay, now I'm not going to go there. I'm not going to leave it. I'm going to go forward. But getting something that's in the future that they can get really excited about. And really, what's something that can get excited, you can get excited about so that you don't need a lot of motivation? Because it's like, oh my goodness, I really want to go there. I want to go there so badly that nothing's going to stop me from going there. And then things start to brighten up, options open up, and that momentum, just that excitement will drive you forward. So as opposed to every day, you know, I have to get away from this thing, looking to forward to something that you're excited about can really be that motivating factor that pulls you out of the past and toward the future.
Well, give us an example of a situation where you worked with somebody and they were stuck, and what ended up being the biggest difference of moving forward was getting them unstuck and then realizing what it was that was their passion that took them forward.
That's a good question. Let's see. Let me think of, I mean, in some respect, it's everybody I work with, but let me think of a specific example. There really are, like, it's everybody. Hold on. You got me off guard on that one. Let's see. Well, I had one person, and this isn't therapy related, so I was trying to think of something specific that way, but I really enjoyed working with this one client who said to me, I need to quit my job. And she was very successful, very high up in her field. And she's like, I'm burned out. I need a sabbatical. I just need to quit this job. And that's it. And it was such a drastic response. And, you know, people make the best choice they can with the information they have in front of them, the options they see in front of them.
Right.
And a lot of times it's this either or, right? And so by expanding, okay, what other options do we have? Then, and at first she was like, none, you know, there are no, this is, I have to quit or not. And when we started working, then she started to see, well, basically I gave her the same advice. We worked the same advice that I just told Meredith. how about if you got rid of everything that you don't like to do about your job and you just had the things that you do like to do about your job? And what would the sabbatical look like? And how do you integrate a sabbatical into your daily, weekly, monthly? And started just generating a whole bunch of ideas. And turned out she kept her job, which was paying her well. She took duties that she didn't like and or didn't want. They weren't fitting with her. She didn't like them. That wasn't part of what was making her feel fulfilled. She gave those opportunities to other people. She built them up and allowed them to get the growth so that they could come up in their job and level them up. And then she found more time in her schedule to do what she wanted to that felt sabbatical-like, right? And put that into the daily and the weekly and the monthly. And part of her goal was to go into work less. And she wanted to go from 5 days a week to 2 days a week. And she did that. And then by having really courageous conversations and moving forward, she was able to get it to down to two times a month that she had to go into the office. So radical change that she couldn't possibly have seen before, right? So that was a really good example of just somebody who didn't see options and then they saw more options.
Well, and I think it's also a good example of someone that knows that something's not right. And you go to someone like yourself, you go to a coach and you go, things aren't right. And you don't know what you want yet. But yet at that point, you steer them in a way that they didn't anticipate. Because I would imagine that on one hand, you have people that go in and they know what they want. Okay, I want you to coach me to be better at this and better at that and so on. And I think that's one way to look at coaching, but I think what you described is another way of, I just don't know for sure what it is that I need, but I know that I need something, which kind of leads me to a question that I have, which is, what do you believe is the biggest misconception about coaching that people have?
The misconception I would say is that people think, oh, if you need a coach, you're down and out. You're having a problem. And it's actually, I think, the opposite. You know, if you're having a real problem, then maybe that's the job for a therapist. But actually, think of like Kobe Bryant, for example, you know, just high level basketball player. And you could think about any elite athlete.
Right.
If you're an elite athlete, you don't have less coaches. You have more coaches.
Mm-hmm.
You might have a strategy coach, a mindset coach, a nutrition coach, a shooting coach, a financial coach. And so the higher you go up, the more successful, the more coaching you need. So that's the biggest misconception. And the other one is kind of something you just pointed to. You might not know. It might just be a feeling. And so coaching is definitely goal-oriented. I have this goal and I want to achieve it. And breaking down goals into different things, that's great. But what happens in coaching is that people discover something that they didn't know. And so even if you just have that feeling like, oh, I got this thing in my heart. I got this heaviness. I'm not sure what it is. I don't know where I want to go. I have a client that I've worked with, and she definitely knew where she wanted to go. She wanted help with her finances. And I talk about money things sometimes because, you know, wealth is part of the things, one of the things I focus on every year, but I talk about wealth of your life. So she's like, I want you to help me with my finances. Fantastic. I am not a financial advisor, but I will talk to you about your finances. Let's go. And what it turned out that she really needed is that she wanted to get more support, and people didn't know how to support her because she wasn't asking for it. She wasn't allowing it in. So here was this giant block about getting support. And it kept on coming up with finances. But that was just one aspect of it. And so by allowing herself to get more support, and again, having these conversations, having more courage with conversations, she's able to ask for the support that she needs. It opened up this whole other side that she was not aware of at all. But she's like, I'm stuck on finances. So if you're stuck on something, maybe talk to a coach and explore that, because maybe there's something even bigger and more beneficial that might come up.
I love it. We're speaking with Jen Selcho, and we are talking about high performance life coaching. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back. And if you know somebody out there and you're thinking, wow, I know who would love this, shoot them a quick message and tell them to tune in. We'll be right back. You're listening to or watching Answers Network.
Conflict International are experts at uncovering the truth. Our specialist team has decades of experience in providing a range of bespoke investigation and intelligence services to companies and individuals. Whether you need professional screening or background checks of employees, due diligence of potential clients or business partners, asset tracing services, or surveillance, Conflict International has a rapid response team on hand to get you to the heart of the matter. Our key strength is in our global capabilities. We can tap into an extensive network of trusted professional investigators based in most jurisdictions worldwide, enabling us to go almost anywhere a case takes us. Conflict International has decades of experience with a diverse range of skills among our team, developed from backgrounds in military and security intelligence services, as well as practice lawyers. Visit our website today at conflictinternational.com to find out more about our services. That's conflictinternational.com. Global reach, local knowledge.
And we're back, and we are talking about life coaching. So, Jen, is there one thing that you tend to work on with clients that's universal to most all of us?
Yeah, absolutely. And I've mentioned it now, but I'll mention it again. Slow down and evaluate the priorities and declutter. Basically, declutter your life. And actually, house clutter is even a good analogy, right? So if your house is, you know, you have a lot of things around, prioritize, you know, what is in my house is important, because the more things that you have, then the more things you have to deal with. So the more clothes you have, the more laundry you have, right? So getting your wardrobe down, get rid of all the things that don't fit, that don't make you feel good, that have a tear. Get rid of the things that don't matter so you can focus on the priorities. And then you have to spend less time on the things that don't matter. And the other thing is, a part of that is giving yourself permission to let the rest go. And I invite people to do an experiment. And you could do that in any area of your life. So when people focus on the priorities, mm-hmm. they're like, okay, I got these top three things, I'm going to focus on them. And then I have to get all this other stuff down. No. Allow yourself to not get the other stuff done. If it's important, if you let, you know, drop the ball and nobody picks up the ball, maybe the ball didn't need to be in play to begin with. I always, you know, I tend to use sports analogies with my athletic training.
But you and I both.
So maybe that ball doesn't need to be picked up. If it does, someone else will do it. You maybe will be surprised. And maybe other people need that opportunity for growth. Maybe by you not doing all of the things, someone else will pick up the ball and they will grow and they will see what's important to them. But focus, slow down, focus on just the top priorities. And I would like to right now grant everybody permission to let the other things go. If they come up as a dire need, they will then present themselves as a greater priority and you can reprioritize. So slow down, priorities, get rid of the stuff, and then reevaluate and then stick again to the priorities.
Now, for anybody out there that knows me, I know what you're thinking. Yes, it does appear she's talking directly to me. I get that. You are nailing one of my biggest problems. So let's talk about that in regards to, you know, so much in regards to priorities is sort of based on our state of mind. So, you know, how as a coach, you know, can you help us just create a better state of mind?
Well, coaches are all about mindset and definitely approaching that by many different factors. If I had to pick one, I would say working on a positive mindset. And a lot of people just want to brush that off. Like, oh, here we go, positivity again. But it actually is, it's so powerful. And that training yourself to have gratitude. It's easy to have gratitude when things are very apparent. Like, oh, this thing's going great. I'm so grateful for this wonderful thing that's happening. How can you challenge yourself to find gratitude in things that are really difficult? And by finding ways to be grateful for it, like, oh, I would have never known this thing if this other tragedy didn't happen. I'll point to an actual tragedy in my life. When I was just 16, I lost a close friend to cancer. And that doesn't happen to a lot of 16-year-olds. No. And it was someone that in the beginning of the year, I had a big group of friends and I said, oh, I'm going to get to know two people better in my group of friends. I was a junior in high school. And this person was, her name's Michelle. She was one of the people I picked. I'm like, I'm going to get to know Michelle better. And that was the year Michelle got cancer and she ended up dying within 6 months of that. And so as a high school junior, it was a lot to, and I was the person she called. We had the conversations and we weren't even best friends. She had like other friends to turn to, but I was the person she talked to. And I was like, wow, this is really hard. People can't relate to this. People don't understand. But the gratitude that came from that is that I got to know someone better. I got to learn how to show up with difficult conversations. I learned that it's important to step up, you know, and meet people where they are and to come to them with just a listening ear and compassion because there were no words to say. There was nothing I could do to fix it. And learning how to just show up for another person when you can't fix the problem was a huge lesson. And I learned gratitude in that moment. So it's not like a positive gratitude mindset alone can just help you just be happy all the time. But by learning the life lessons, even in the difficult, can start to move you in a different direction. Does that answer?
Yeah. So along those lines, so let's say that we've got the positive attitude. We operate from a place of gratitude. One of the terminologies, things that I use, and it dates me, but there used to be variety shows that the guy would start at one end and he would spin a pie plate. And he would go all the way down the stage and he'd spin about 20 pie plates. And when he'd get to the last one, that first one was starting to wobble. And he'd run back as fast as he could and he'd spin that one. He'd go as fast as he could back and forth. And eventually, he'd have to stop and they would fall or he would have to grab them. So at least for me, the visual that I have is that I say, I've got too many pie plates spinning and I need to set some down or they're all going to fall down. What's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, exactly. Well, that would point to the priorities. And again, you know, going back to Meredith, like if you just have three priorities in each of the sections of your life, you are talking about 20 pie plates. And that's if you just pick seven things, you'll have 21, you know, so right. It can easily expand out. So just narrowing what you need to do in each area of your life and will help. The second thing is having a strategy where you can revisit. So I've already said, reprioritize and get the information that you've learned and then go back. And so having a system in place where, you know, I'm going to look at every area of my life and I'm going to do that in a systematic fashion. I do something personally, and this is what I work with clients with too. I break the year down into quarters. And the first quarter is health. So the beginning of the year when you're like, oh, I want to get in better shape. I want to do the thing. You know, how do you get better health? And that's body, mind, spirit. So 3 months in a quarter. So we'll break it down that way. And the second quarter, I do wealth. So like I said, we might talk about money, but then how do you bring more wealth into your life? And then what else can you set down? How many of those pie plates can you get rid of so you're just focused on the things that really, really matter that bring you a wealthy life? The third quarter is when I do goal setting, and it's called I do growth. So goal setting in Q3 is really important, like in a business, because Q4, you're not going to start any new things. Q1 is when you hit the ground running. So all the way in that summertime, when you can chill out, relax with summer, you can start thinking about how you want to grow and expand. Great time for goal setting for the next year. And on the other side of the goal setting is also rest. So for example, like if you work out, when you rest is when your muscles grow, right. Not during the workout, but when you rest. Short-term memory goes to long-term memory when you sleep. So rest is such a vital importance of growth. I like to put that on people's schedule, Q3. How are you going to grow? How are you going to rest in the next year? And people can start off by putting their vacations for next year down. And then Q4 is relationships. And how do you want to focus on your relationships? What type of relationship do you want to have with your kids? How can you foster that in the best ways? And then back to Q1, you're back on health. So you have a systematic approach to dealing with everything in your life. Everything falls under one of those categories. And having that, so you're going to really take a deep dive each quarter, because the next year is going to be totally different. Your health is going to be different, or your relationship is going to be different. So it has to be reevaluated. But having an annual thing to do, that's part of my process.
Now, and you mentioned that you had a variety of professions that you had before this. Was it difficult for you to decide that you're going to set those down and just focus on coaching other people?
The part that was difficult was letting go of my sports medicine career and being a mom. I really wanted to just be a full-time mom. I knew that since I was little, because I worked with so many kids. I'm like, no, I want to spend time with my kids. So I knew it was something I wanted to do, but I didn't realize how much I identified as an athletic trainer, as a sports professional, as a sports medicine professional. And so I needed to separate. I am someone who does sports medicine. I am not sports medicine. And that was like a big leap for me. Going into coaching was a no-brainer. Once I knew that was just a thing I could do full-time, this is what I love to do. I love to, I'll give you an example of my life. When I was going for this really big sports medicine job, I put down people for references. And two people, they did not know each other. They knew me from different times in my life under different circumstances. But when I talked to them, they're like, yeah, they called. And I told them that Jen can get people to do things they never thought they could do. And they each used the exact same words. So that gave me a lot of insight to myself. So what people say, like, to you about you, to sum you up, that might give you a lot of insight. And I do have a rule that I help with my kids is, if you're hearing the same piece of information from people that are totally unrelated in your life, listen. And so that was something I listened to. And when I found out the coaching, it was a way I could full-time help people to do things they never thought they could do. I was like, I'm in.
I love that. And being sort of a helper bee of sorts as well, I can relate to that. Are there professions that you find you have more difficulty getting them to, to only identify with themselves in that one thing? I mean, be it a doctor, an attorney, a cop, a judge, or whatever. Are there certain professions that seem to be more difficult in that area? That you've worked with?
Yeah. None really come to mind, because I think everybody's such an individual. Maybe athletes, though. Like,
okay.
So, because being an athlete is something that's so part of you. I can actually see it a little bit. It's going to be a little bit with everybody. So not anybody in particular.
Right.
You know, so... But I know that with athletes, it's hard because it's part of who you are, in that those people are athletic and they're a physical being, right? And so, like, you eat every day, right? So right. All athletes work out all the time. And so there's a close tie to who they are and how they take care of themselves physically, mentally, and all of that. That is a pretty close tie. That was a really good question. I had to go pan through every.
Well, but I think you're right, and I didn't have any preconceived notion of what the answer would be, but I have friends that are or were former professional athletes, and so I was able to see the change that they would go through. And I think you're right. It was, you know, they ate as an athlete, they worked out as an athlete, they thought as an athlete. In other words, everything that they did, whereas I think for many other people in their work, it doesn't encompass everything that they do. So I think you're right on target with that. We've got another listener question that has come in. And this one is, it reads, I'm a 42-year-old divorced woman, and I dealt with a lot of mental abuse in that relationship. What steps can I take to heal from my past relationship, build self-confidence, and attract a compatible life partner while staying true to my authentic self? And this is from from Bridget in Boston, Massachusetts.
All right. Thank you, Bridget. Bridget, right?
Yes.
Thank you, Bridget. And first, I'd like to say I'm sorry that you were in a relationship where you were suffering any kind of abuse. That's, you know, very difficult. And I just want to let you know I heard that. And then the first step would be, if there is anything that you need to deal with a therapist, then that would be a step. And you did allude to things within your answer. And here's the beautiful thing about coaching is that you have the answer for you. Each person has the answer that is best for them. And so for me to go through steps, it's part of what I do is to help bring that answer out. And you alluded to it in saying that, how can I stay true to my most authentic self? And coming up with your values, really digging into your values, what have been good parts of your relationships in any relationship? What are the things you value in relationships? What do you value in yourself that you want to maintain and you don't want to let go of? How did past relationships, taking a dive into those, what areas of those relationships did you maybe not set up a boundary and so that you were feeling pain for yourself? And then also envisioning something great. So you said, how do I attract something that's really good for me? And the whole law of attraction, we could get into that. But the things I like to say about law of attraction is that having a really clear idea of what you want and already being in a place of gratitude. And that's part of the thing. If you really look into the law of attraction, then gratitude comes up really big. Because if you're not grateful for where you are in this moment and for the things that you learned from maybe the difficult things in your life, then the propensity to still attract what you don't want is still there. And so being grateful, like I'm really grateful for where I am now, but I'm super excited for building on what I have now to there. And that could go for anybody, right? Where am I now? Taking a really clear understanding of this is what I have, and now I want to build on it. And then setting goals that can build forth from that. I hope that answer serves you.
I think it was great. And I love the fact that you zeroed in on her wanting to be authentic. And it suggests that she may have not been that in her relationship and she wants to find it again. So I think that was an excellent way for her to handle it. So everybody out there, we're speaking with Jen Silshow, and we're talking about being your best self in many different ways. But we're going to take a break. We'll be right back. You're listening to or watching Answers Network. Having a teenager at risk who is going through a traumatic experience can be difficult on parents, siblings, and all who are working with that young person. No family should have to go through this process alone. West Shield Adolescent Services is here to ensure you don't have to. Many of the psychologists and psychiatrists we work with have spoken about the stress families go through. Not just the young person, but the parents, needing to get their child to a program where they can get the help they need. West Shield aims to lessen that stress. Every case goes through a thorough intake process with one of our knowledgeable, compassionate intake coordinators. We want to know the likes, the dislikes, and the fears of each child. This important information is taken into consideration when choosing the best suited team member for each individual teenager. West Shield agents come from all different walks of life, giving us a diverse group of team members to ensure a personalized, compassionate experience for every teenager. This allows us to make certain every young person we work with gets to the chosen program in the best possible state of mind.
we contacted over 600 of the youth we've worked with in the past to see where they're at now. 97% of these individuals told us how much their lives had improved, that they had better relationships with their friends and families, had gone on to marry, have kids, and were now using the skills they learned in their program to raise their own children. Our role of transporting at-risk teenagers is a vital step in the process of ensuring a youth's ability to thrive in their new environment, and is a role we don't take lightly. The recovery process can be a long one, but like any journey, it started with a single step.
And we're back. You're listening to or watching Answers Network. We are speaking with a life coach, but sometimes it's more than a life coach when you have someone that can help bring out the things that you weren't even thinking about yet. So, Jen, what I'd like you to do, and one of the things that questions that I get or comments that I get from people on the show is they say one of their favorite parts is success stories. Can you share with us a couple of your favorite success stories, again, of people who came to you with whatever their situation was and what they're doing now?
Okay. Well, I did do one of my favorite was the one that I was working with the president who was able to keep her job and then live a life sabbatical. Mm-hmm. She feels like her whole life is a sabbatical now, even though she's maintaining her job and able to build things up. So that was a good favorite. I have another client who just felt really, really overwhelmed. And there's this constant state of overwhelm. But she was able to move out of that, identify what she wanted to do. And it's been really, really fantastic. Her daughter has a business with walking dogs, and they were able to take that just a dog walking business. And she's able to work with her daughter. They actually started a nonprofit where they'll take people that have dogs and they will train them up to be therapy dogs and then take the dogs out to teens at risk, work with a group that are teens that don't have housing. They have either housing or food insecurities. And then they'll take the dogs there to hang out with the teens, or they'll take the dogs to a senior group. And so here, she's been able to channel something that she loves into something even greater that helps other people, something outside themselves. So
that one touches my heart right there. I love that.
Yeah.
So do you have another one, or if not, we've got another question that's coming in.
The other one I talked about, I think I talked about the ones that I love the most, they come to mind the best, but the person who thought they were doing finances, but they want support. They've been able to open up themselves to get support from their friends and family that has been overwhelming. It's like this joy comes and they're able to ask for what they need and get the support they need. And it's really changing different areas of their life that they didn't think and that could be possible. And I love that.
You know, I'm glad that you brought that one up again, because it had me thinking of something. Do you think that sometimes, or with some people that are unable to ask for that help, if they're the person that everybody else goes to? You mentioned that was you. So I think you might have some very personal insight into this one, that if you're the go-to person and everybody goes to you, does it make it more difficult for you to then ask for help from other people? And is it possible that at some level it's because you're afraid that they will think that maybe you're not the one that can answer everything if you have to come to other people? You kind of follow me on this?
Yeah, that's a really interesting question. And boy, so much came to mind. So I have three things. Like you said, well, from a personal point of view, what I learned when people came to me, I didn't personally have that thing where if I didn't feel like I had the answers, they wouldn't come to me anymore, because I mean, people just always come to me. That's been a natural thing. However, not asking for support, that was a thing for me. And I asked one time, so I host everything at my house, and I am the go-to person. And I once out loud said, what would happen if I didn't do it all? I went, oh, And there it is. There's the question. What would happen if I didn't do it all? And that's where I went, you got to let these balls lie. And if it's important, somebody will pick it up. And a lot of times people have problem getting support because they want to be supported in a certain way and people aren't doing it right. So two things I have to say to that, you know, either let people do it wrong and come support you in the manner that they can show up. And then you can work with them on how do you need to be supported differently and go directly and address that directly. And that comes down to difficult conversations. The other thing was, do you think people that they're the go-to person and they don't feel supported, is it because they don't ask for it because they feel that they might not be the go-to person? I think that is a thing. And the place where that can be a place emotionally. And I don't want to get into any personal stories on where that's happened and that's shown up in coaching, but I can take it to a different place. Okay. So how about if you are the president, the CEO, a very high level executive? That can be lonely at the top. Like, that's a whole thing. Yeah. It's lonely at the top. So can you go to your superiors? Well, then they might not think that I have the answers. Maybe they'll think that I shouldn't be the CEO, president, whatever high executive company. Do I want to go to the people below me? No, because then they could feel like I'm weak and I don't know what I'm doing and I can't lead. So that's where being the person, the go-to person, can really come up. So, and that's where coaching can be really important, because how then do those people find the support they need? How do they get people around them that can support them in not only in the job, but other aspects of their life? Because when you hold back in one area of your life, it's really hard to be selective, right? Like, if you're not letting love in one area, you're probably not letting love in a lot of other areas. So how can you open up to support, love, the things that you need? And because it's probably touching on a lot of areas in your life.
Well, I think you brought up a great point is, you know, when you're the president of the company or something like that, you can't go to your board or your investors that have put you in that position, because they may think maybe you shouldn't be in that position. So I love how you brought that up. Okay, we've only got about 2 minutes, so let me put this question out there. So this one reads, I retired 6 months ago from a retail sales position and want to do something. And then it has in parentheses, like Alan says, to make a positive difference in the world. And this is from Mark in Madison, Wisconsin. So thank you, Mark, because the fact that you mentioned me must mean that you've listened to multiple shows. So I appreciate that.
Yeah, and that's fantastic. And that's coming up a lot with the people that I'm talking to, the sense of purpose. And so I will have a little ebook that people can sign in for. We'll get to that maybe in the next minute, but for some 12 steps. But again, it's going to come back to priorities and really looking at the past. So what things have you done in your past that really meant something to you? Because that'll point to the fulfillment. Where do you feel super satisfied in relationships and past jobs that you've done? And then taking that sense of, oh, this is where I find purpose. And then how can I really expand my ideas on this is the place that I can really set up this place I really want to run to and find that fulfillment, that sense of purpose, find your gifts, your values, and then how do you want to implement that in the future to help people so it's a cause outside of yourself? Those would be the things: values, your skills, and something outside of yourself.
Well, Jen, thank you so much. And again, what's the best way that people can get in touch with you? Because unfortunately, we've run out of time. But if anybody wants, if they have more questions or they want to get in touch with you, what is the best way for them to do that?
I'll write down the spelling of my name. It's Jen Selcho with two N's, Selcho at jenselcho.com. They can look up my website and there's information there. And then I do have a little ebook for the 12 key moves towards success and fulfillment. And it'll outline some of the things I talked about today. And if your listeners would text AN for Answers Network, then to 949-776-0772, I'll get that ebook out to them, and that'll give them a starting point.
Oh, I love that. Again, thank you. And Chris, if you're listening, can you make sure we put that in the show notes as well? So again, Jen, thank you so much. Thank you for coming on the show, but even more so, thank you for making a positive difference in people's lives.
Thank you for having me, Alan. It's been my pleasure.
All right. And for everybody out there, if you enjoyed this episode, make sure you click the like button. And if you're interested in seeing more content like this, please subscribe to the show. You can check out our other shows on our Answers Network channel or our Answers Network website or any major social media platform. Next week, we're going to be joined by a neuropathy expert, Jeff Cossier, as he discusses the major problem the U.S. is experiencing with neuropathy and how to make sure that you don't get this painful disease. So for everybody out there, thanks for tuning in. And for everybody, know that every day you can be a good human being and you can be with us next week on Answers Network.
You're listening to Answers Network with Alan Cardoza, only on LA Talk Radio.